it's the lack of affordable housing.
When you get mad about what's happening in the shelter system, understand the shelter system itself is doing the best it can, given the constraints it's under. And a really big constraint they're under is the lack of permanent housing for people to move into.
In Calgary, where Professor Kneebone works and lives, getting housing built isn't as big of a hurdle.
It's more expensive to build housing in Toronto than it is in Calgary. And one of the reasons for that is government regulations and government restrictions on the type of housing that is built. There are far fewer restrictions in Calgary and Alberta than there are in Ontario. It's simply easier and cheaper to build housing in Alberta than it is in Ontario.
Affordable housing not getting built fast enough means less people are able to leave the shelter system because there's nowhere else for them to go. The shelter works on a referral basis through the city's central intake line. This is a 24/7 phone-based service providing intake assessments and referrals to Toronto's shelter system. It is a first-come, first-served system. For the Adelaide site, anyone over the age of 18 is eligible for referral. Once welcomed, the site's director, Brian Harris, says the goal is to house each individual for as short a period of time as possible, transitioning them to a more permanent living space eventually. But as far as he's seen, this hasn't been the case.
We've been really trying to narrow our focus in the last 3 years or so on permanent housing, because I think that's our position. Like most folks, permanent housing is the thing that's really lacking and is really the only solution to homelessness. It is important that we don't lose sight of that being our end goal. You know, it does feel like it's hard to put a date on that at the moment, given the severity and the scale of the problem. But I think given that the city is making these important investments and they're making these important additions to the system, you know, I think over the next few years, we'll be in a better position to be able to start doing some longer forecasting to say, okay, can we finally start to see this expanding the infrastructure project that the city's undertaking is having an effect?
While shelters can't be the solution alone to homelessness, they are still necessary for emergencies like the one Toronto is in right now. Professor Kneebone says this isn't an either-or argument.
People who say that, you know, the goal is to eliminate homeless shelters, frankly, they're dreaming. We are always going to experience homelessness, always. And there's always going to be the need for a place for people to stay temporarily while they transition from one housing unit to another housing unit.
He says there needs to be more housing units that people with low income can actually afford. That would then clear the backlog for those holding out in shelters and get people moving into those transitional spaces. Toronto's already made some headway on this. A sweeping set of housing initiatives were approved in July. Over $200 million will be put towards 39 new housing projects. But for Kneebone, even that isn't enough.
The social system is not providing enough income for people, even desperate people, doing all they can to hang on to the housing.
While provincial and federal levels of government provide funding to municipalities who open and maintain these shelters, Professor Kneebone says without support from senior levels of government, much of their work is counterintuitive, perpetuating the cycle of homelessness.
Senior levels of governments also contribute to the problem. One way they contribute to the problem is not providing sufficient income support for people struggling to maintain their housing, and so they end up losing their housing and end up in shelters.
Canada remains a top destination for immigrant populations, but since Carney's taken office, much has changed for foreigners seeking refuge.
They also contribute to the problem, especially at the federal level, by not doing a very good job of dealing with immigration and asylum seekers, which is a particular problem for Toronto.
Asylum seekers are left in limbo because they're not allowed to work, but they're still staying in the country. And with no other housing alternative, they often end up in shelters.
And why is that a specific problem for Toronto?
Simply because that's where asylum seekers tend to congregate. When asylum seekers come into the country, they come across the border at certain places. Many of those places are in Eastern Canada near Toronto, and so people tend to migrate to Toronto.
end of July, the news broke that Ottawa would stop funding hotel rooms for asylum seekers. Those staying there will have to check out by the end of September, according to the Immigration, Refugee and Citizen Department of Canada, or the IRCC. Between 2021 and 2023, the city of Toronto saw a 440% increase in refugee claimants in the shelter system. Meanwhile, plans to revamp Canada's outdated asylum system have been cancelled, while newly proposed border laws will likely make it more difficult for immigrants to claim asylum.
Homelessness is a sign that we're failing people. The social safety net has got way too many holes in it, and we need to start closing those holes and helping people. It's a misunderstanding to believe that people who are homeless are somehow bums who are not trying. That's wrong. Everything I've seen in the data suggests that people experiencing homelessness are fighting like hell to get out of that situation. And what they need is some support from the rest of us to make them, to allow them to do that.
Even Brian Harris, who is employed by the shelter system, isn't happy about seeing a new shelter pop up. He says shelters are a sign of a sick society.
Shelters are sort of a canary in the coal mine for the health of a society and a civilization. More shelters means that your society is not doing that great because people are not getting their basic needs met.
This is Mia Johnson for the Local Journalism Initiative.
And thanks to CJMT for that interesting report. Yeah, really interesting. And of course, those problems exist in just about every, and issues, just about every large Canadian city across the land.
That was a College Station, Magnus?
Yes, it is. It is the station at Toronto Metropolitan University.
Okay.
All right, this is Men I Trust. They are a Canadian band, and this is their track, I Don't Like Music.
I can't.
Men I Trust and I Don't Like Music. That's from their most recent album. Gardening with Embark will be up in just a moment, and then we'll be following that with Peter R.H.'s commentary. What are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
We're talking about Venezuela, and I'm not going to... You know, it's ironic about... so he placed a $50 million reward for Maduro, and yet he's not allowing a majority of people from Venezuela who would like to come to the United States to come over. There's been a suspension of that on June 9th. So it's typical Trump. So as of June 9th, both immigrant and non-immigrant visas for Venezuelans wishing to enter the U.S. are now suspended.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll be up with that.
But it won't be... I won't be praising Hugh Chavez, however. I just want to say that to preface my statements later.
Okay. Well, we'll be up with that in about 9 minutes. But first, it's time now for Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio is Pablo Vimas. Pablo is the gardens manager for Embark Sustainability Society and our gardening expert. And
hello, good morning.
Good morning. It is week 33?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it has passed so fast since we started sharing of since the spring.
Yeah.
We started, yeah, week 33. And next week will be week 34.
Yeah.
And then we start or have only 10 weeks left before the first frost.
Right.
So we are getting to a crunchy time to have our garden ready with the vision that winter is closing.
Which is a funny thing to think of in the middle of August, but I guess that's part of the gardener's cycle, though.
It is. It is. As I say, we are always a season ahead, so we can keep growing our vegetable garden year-round.
So what do you want to talk to us about today?
So as a gardener, you might have walked in your garden, and you, if you have strawberries, you will have noticed that there are lots of runners, and along the runners we have a small little plant, a strawberry plant. So at the moment is the right time to trim those runners and put those small strawberry plants. So put into regular soil, if you want potting soil as well. As long as you, this small plant gets in contact with soil, your root system will start developing.
So strawberries are I think a rhizome
Rhizomes, yes.
Yeah. And what does that mean for people who don't know?
So what it means that plants kind of reach a maturity and therefore put all these runners and small clones, so small plants which are the clone of the mother plant. Strawberries tend to produce very well during 3-4 years, and after that the production goes down. So we gardeners want to have a patch full of strawberries.
Yeah.
So we use these small plants that we harvest over the we plant over the fall, to replace the plants that are dying over the coming weeks, months, and so so it's like keeping new plants, fresh plants coming, and replacing the old plants in our strawberry patch.
Right. So instead of starting from seeds or whatever, each year.
Yeah. Starting for seeds is really slow.
Right.
Really slow. So we prefer to use what the plant already does, which is an asexual way of reproduction, creating small clones.
So with strawberries, then, are you leaving the plant in the ground each year and then replacing it, or?
Yeah, so the plant stays. Strawberry plants, if they are open to the... open to the sky, they will get some snow, some plants will die, some plants will still survive. But we, as I mentioned, each three, 4 years, we need to renew the patch. So the plants will be slowly been changing.
Right.
And so now as well is the time that if you have someone that you have seen that strawberry patch is so productive and you have seen that you fall in love with those big strawberries, that is the time to go and ask, can I have some plants, some of those runners so you can bring to your garden.
Right.
Yeah.
So once you take the runners and you trim them off and capture that little clone the little plant that's ready to start. What do you do with it then to keep it ready for next season?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. So we will, what we'll do, we put under the hoop house, mm-hmm. so under a cover, just to prevent that survives, just to make sure that it survives the winter. Yeah, okay. So we don't want that they die, because now it's a precious little plant,
yeah.
which will start some a root system, and we can keep watering, maintaining, and protecting from the elements until it's time to...
Right, and the hoop house will offer enough protection
yeah, it does.
From
yes.
wind and yeah. snow and stuff to allow it to carry on until next year.
Correct. So, for instance, today is a cold weather, so we are talking about 15 degrees yeah. in comparison with the beginning of the week. And as well, we slowly start feeling a cold wind coming.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this cold wind will get more often, more and colder. So by November, we make sure that our plants that we want to keep for over the winter, they need to be protected from cold winds.
Right. Yeah. But they'll be able to stay outside all winter. You don't need to bring them into a
yeah, so other
a warmer stay, environment.
So yeah, the plants that are already established in a garden bed, they will stay outside.
Right.
Yeah, but these little ones, you can bring it under cover, under a roof, just to prevent that the cold wind kills them.
Right. Excellent. And then that ensures your garden renewal.
Correct. Garden frequently garden renewal. It ensures that you have a nice harvest of strawberries, and yeah, and then and as well is the time that for us if you to share with other members of the community,
right.
neighborhoods. Yeah, you have lots of little plant seedlings that you can mm-hmm. share, and to that which brings us to us as a, in our garden. In our garden, we should have a spot what we call the gift patch
mm-hmm.
where friends and family share plants with us. Yeah, take right. that. And we say, okay, I will put in this patch. And
yeah.
the same when we feel like we need to be reciprocated with somebody else, we just take plants from there and we share. So it's a patch that is always changing with plants.
Right. So you can either have your friends come over, but I guess you could also put them into a little pot and pass them on that way.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. People always happy to have a little plant.
I think we often forget how what a communal activity gardening is, because of course, you know, people have their own little patch, but you're still talking to others, you're sharing with others. You know, if you're at a community garden, of course, you have mm-hmm. all your peers around you right there.
Yes.
Yeah. Going on, and of course, what you're doing with the learning garden is the same experience.
Correct. So yes, we with the learning garden, we build a community, and as well, we encourage everyone that. Share the harvest, share the produce, and share plants that perhaps you don't have room anymore in your garden,
right.
but somebody will have it. So
yeah.
yeah, share, and as well, you will receive plants from people that like to give it to you, and you just bring it and put in your gift patch.
Excellent. You must be. We've talked before about the learning cohorts you have, and you must be starting to recruit for your fall cohort, yeah?
Yes, correct. So we are almost at the end of the second summer cohort. And next week, week 34, is our last meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are already calling for anyone that is interested in joining our cohort for the fall. We are going to start on the week of the 25th of September.
Yeah.
And we go all the way until November the 4th.
Great.
So, yeah, so 7 weeks. Yeah, this fall cohort will have an opportunity to transition from nice fall into, the end of the summer into the fall already. Because we know that by week 44, around November the 11th, we will have the first frost.
Excellent. How do people find out more about that program and the rest of Embark?
Yeah, so if you're interested in joining us, please look into our website where under events and volunteer, and then you can see what events and volunteer opportunities we have. So our website is embarksustainability.org, and as well, keep an eye on our social media channels, Facebook and Instagram, and at Embark Sustainability. So we post everything that's coming and going in there.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimes, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society and our Gardens Expert.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
See you next week.
Humans Hysterical Scripts, award-winning anti-fascist knife clip. Mondays at 10 p.m. on 90.1 FM CJSF Brazen.
All right, Peter.
Anyway, so I did mention that so the Donald Trump administration for Mandura, it's a $50 million reward if you get him. I guess it's dead or alive. However,
so they put a bounty out on
something.
Another country's leader.
Now, this is, as of June 9th, 2025, both immigrant and non-immigrant visas for Venezuelans wishing to enter the U.S. are now suspended. There are some exemptions, which I'm not, it's a bit, I mean, but it's sort of a mixed message, isn't it? You know, it's like you're not, I mean, if you really think it's a terrible country for these people, why don't you let them come to the United States? But I guess that's not how they roll. Now, Chevron is now again allowed to pump oil in Venezuela, reversing a ban that happened in February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
The reversal is believed to be part of a recent prisoner swap deal that saw the return of 10 remaining Americans who have been detained by the Venezuelan government. So, kind of mixed messages again from him. Now, however, another thing I'm going to bring up that was kind of idiotic was who's that multimillionaire, Brandon, of the airlines?
Oh.
He, in 2019, he had this idea of some sort of attempted coup that was kind of like a ridiculous thing.
Right.
So I'm kind of distancing myself from this. However, legacy of Hugo Chavez is not good. And also, it sort of was by him dying as he did. He sort of died before the expression, when the machicans come to roost, you know. It was going to happen eventually. Like, if he had been, he was 58 when he died.
Yeah.
So if he could have been alive now, into going into his 70s. But the thing is that how he had made the mistake that other politicians had made in the history of Venezuela in the 20th century, relying too much on the oil money, and he kind of this is one thing. In 2009, Oliver Stone did a documentary south of the border. It was about Hugo Chavez in 2009, when things look kind of better than it does now. And it's about a few of the other countries in South America. He was kind of helping out a little bit. But one thing that I got from that is that he was saying, oh, I study all these things all the time. And he has these books, economic books. And it was like he was single-handedly controlling a lot of aspects of the economy. He was not having a committee of people. I suppose he was doing to some extent. I mean, you have to do it. But he just wasn't doing that. You can't have that's not how Franklin Roosevelt did it. He had a bit of he basically disseminated authority on things. But that doesn't seem what Hugo Chavez is doing. In fact, it's seen as kind of a virtue in the film. If you see the 2009, which you can, it's on the internet, quite easily, south of the border. It's seen as actual virtue. How hard he was sort of working for the people of Venezuela, but he wasn't. And he was also appearing on TV sometimes, like 5 hours at a time or even more. And one thing I sort of noticed, I had Oliver Stone, after he died, he came up with a 50-minute documentary on Hugh Chavez. And I see a lot of this kind of this promotion of the cult of personality with him, which is not good. And another thing that I had seen is a YouTube posting of public transport under Hugh Chavez is mm-hmm. to have. It's actually what they are proposing here in SFU. You know, like what the actual, not the ski lift, but like the gondola.
Yep.
Well, it's not a good economic way of doing public transportation. And I hope that we don't do it here over at Simon Fraser.
You ever been stuck up here during a snowstorm? Carry on.
Anyway, I was at my place at Lougheed Mall at 9:25. I got here late. I was here at 10, so I mean from the SkyTrain and the one mm-hmm. bus. But he totally mismanaged that economy. And he sort of has still a bit of a cult now. You know, I think people have reason to think that, the reason they're in their trouble now is the fault of embargoes and so on. And that's not the way it is at all. He just didn't manage that economy properly at all. And
I think one of the things he was sort of guilty of is sort of trying to pump the economy to make people more comfortable or whatever in this, but not so much with the long-term interests of everybody involved, including the country, but rather just to boost and maintain his own popularity and hold on power.
The other aspect is that the petroleum money helped him out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things he did was cheap gas, right?
And then, ironically, you can't get gas in Venezuela now, supposedly, because you got to refine it and so on. But no, I mean, actually, like for example, Cuba. Well, a lot of people, the people that say how great Cuba is, they never really had an economy for years. Mm-hmm. Castro just hitched them up to Soviet Union. And this thing about the sugar cane was just a symbolic thing. I mean, the Soviet Union was overpaying for what they were getting from Cuba. They could have gotten cheaper from elsewhere. Yeah. So, it wasn't as bad as Cuba because of all the petroleum, which they say is the highest, is the largest reserves in the world. I think it's like 15% of the petroleum is there in the world. So, I mean, they were lucky that way. But unfortunately, no. In fact, he also created kind of a totalitarian state that didn't. I mean, how bad it got when the economy got worse after he had died. It was made more apparent. But Oliver Stone likes him. I guess he still enjoys him. Anyway.
All right. Any last words?
No, that's about. I know April knew some people from there. They're more favorable. Maybe we might have them on the show to just say their point of view about it in future.
All right. That's all about all the time we have today for Speak Up. Thank you for listening to us. My name is Magnus Tiefold, joining me in the studio.
Peter R.H.
And lots of great programming coming up here on CGSF today. Democracy Now! Is up in just a couple of minutes. Up at noon is Wandering Rhythms. At 3 p.m., typically Tuesday.
25 hours, it's Raccoon City. 25 hours from now.
Yeah. And then and lots more. So stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming up right now. It's not as simple as